Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Please welcome to the show, sisters and twins, Christy and Jenny from The Soul Sisters Paranormal.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Is this my imagination, or am I actually seeing double? Well, the answer to that question is, yes, I am. Jenny and Christy, who formed the group Soul Sisters Paranormal. Yep, they are twins. And not only twins, but they began as a group of sisters and friends who traveled to some of the most reportedly haunted locations across the U.S. They have investigated private homes, businesses, cemeteries, abandoned buildings, and yet have more to seek out in the adventures of paranormal investigating. In 2020, the group primarily became twin sisters Jenny and Christy, who have always had a fascination with the paranormal since a very young age. While their investigations are based mostly in Central Florida, the sisters have traveled to and are willing to travel across the country in order to investigate interesting locations. Both Jenny and Christy are accomplished professionals in their respective fields and each hold an advanced degree of a PhD. Paranormal investigations and education are just parts of the services that are provided, and both Jenny and Christy take their role as investigator very, very seriously. While the evidence that Soul Sisters Paranormal has collected and summarized on their website to them and to us might seem like verifiable paranormal activity, such claims can never be made completely verified in its entirety. We had a very interesting chat tonight regarding all kinds of aspects of the paranormal. Very interesting gals, and I think you're going to find them to be very delightful. So please welcome to the show this evening, Jenny and Christy from Soul Sisters Paranormal. Well, good evening, ladies, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, no problem. Today we have with us the Soul Sisters Paranormal. We have Jenny. Jenny, raise your hand a little bit. Yep, and we have Christy. And if you can't already tell, they are, yes, indeed, they are twins. And how exciting for all of us to actually be able to have that opportunity to delve into the world of what it's like to actually live with your twin. So, well, here we go. So most people know that I start out with a foundation on my guests, and I do want both of you to kind of go back in time. And even though you're the same age and born on the same day and all that, we would be interested in knowing whether or not you had experiences also occur around the same time. So whichever one of you wants to start first, go way back to as far as you can remember. And then just tell us, when did you have paranormal, cryptid, whatever, a type of experience? And let's start with that.
Absolutely. So really our first paranormal experience started when we formed Soul Sisters Paranormal, or just before. Now we've always had a belief in the paranormal. We always knew that there was something that's going to happen after we die. And so we come from a research minded background. All of our family, has that innate curiosity. And so we decided that if we ever had the opportunity to go on a paranormal investigation, we would jump on that experience. And so we have a younger sister. And we would routinely take girls trips to different parts of the country because we live in different parts of the country. And in 2013, we had the opportunity to go to Moundsville, West Virginia, which is where the West Virginia State Penitentiary is located. And we had a family friend that sat on the board of that facility. And he said, while you're having your girls weekend, why don't you take one of those nights and stay at the penitentiary and see if you can connect with our resident spirits? And so we jumped at that chance. So we took some voice recorders, some digital cameras, a couple of night vision video cameras, and we left that experience with what we felt was compelling data of the unexplained. And so after that, we decided to form Soul Sisters Paranormal.
Did both of you investigate together, or did you investigate in a larger group? Did you break off as a pairing of two, or were you in a pairing, or not a pairing, but in a group of four, or how did you manage that?
Well, when we first started, based on Chrissy's story there, when we first started and we first had that first paranormal experience, it was a group of five of us that went. It was Christy, myself, our younger sister, and then a couple of family friends that were with us. And so in that moment, it's such a large facility. We were able to break off. We did some independent investigations on that first night. We did some group investigations as well on that first night. And so we were really able to have some different experiences utilizing different numbers of our party that were together in different ways. But I think that Christy and I have always had this really unique bond being identical twins. And so just being able to utilize those in our paranormal investigation and in the work that we do, I think is really interesting as well. I mean, there are times where we have finished each other's dreams, where we can sense some things that are happening, even though we live in two totally different states, she in Tennessee and I in Florida. We have those moments where we're just kind of sensing different things. And I think we're able to bring that unique kind of twin element into how we investigate.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, especially with the intuition part. A lot of times people hear through some of these studies, and I'm sure, I don't know if you guys been studied. I'm going to presume maybe indirectly or yes is the answer, but you'll have to tell us that sometimes, yes, just like what you said, you can have one twin on the East Coast, one twin on the West Coast. And for some reason, they can sense if there's something wrong or someone's not feeling right, or let's say you don't even know you have a twin, and you can still sense that something is a little bit going on. Have you had a number of those moments? Would you base that on some kind of unusual connection because you were born together, or do you think intuition? What do you think about all of that?
I do think it's because obviously we were born together, and we've always been very close. I mean, Jenny's my best friend, and to your point, we live in different states, but I mean, we talk three or four times a day. If I don't talk to her at least three or four times a day, something's wrong. We'll just call each other about random things. But, there was, for an example, when we were in high school, we were both 17, and I had attended a function, and I was coming home that night, and Jenny was at home, and she just got up and started getting dressed, and my mom said, what are you doing? Why are you getting dressed? And she said, I think Christy's going to be in a car accident. Oh. And on the way home, this was before cell phones, and on the way home, I was in a car accident. And so Jenny was actually on her way and arrived to the scene before the police even got there. Oh. And so that was an interesting example of kind of that closeness that we have. And to Jenny's point, we finished dreams. I will start one dream and I'll call her up and she's like, well, the dream ends like this because I had the same dream. So that's happened a couple of times.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, let's hope it's a good ending and not a bad ending. But even
it's so, always a great ending.
It's always a great ending. Ending. And you're like, yeah, tell me as you're sitting there eating popcorn, waiting for the end result. You know, that's kind of interesting. Did you guys ever get studied at all from any university in any way regarding your unique ability to be so connected?
Not really. I mean, we filled out a couple of questionnaires and stuff at different times, but really not a full-fledged study on us. But I think it would be interesting. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'm wondering about, and I'm not sure if this correlates at all, is have you ever heard of this twin flame connection at all? Would you consider yourselves to be twin flames where there's this connective ability with each other? Or would you say that's different than what you have?
I think we definitely have that connectivity there. And it's interesting, and it really opened up kind of this really philosophical, maybe theoretical perspective of nature versus nurture. Because we have a younger sister who's obviously not part of our twinship, if you will. And we're very close with her as well. So there's some things that I think just through that nurture process and that growth process and growing up so closely together that we're able to sense with her as well. But certainly Christy and I have that unique bond. And I think that carries over into how we investigate and how we utilize that twin element in our investigations as well. So we'll go into different locations and we'll be able to kind of sense what each other's going to say next or sense what each other's feeling and those types of things. So I think that there's definitely some, to your point, Kelly, the twin flame pieces of it and that connectivity there. But it also begs the question of, is that nature, that nurture type of a feel?
Yeah. I know I'm a twin flame with an ex-boyfriend of mine. I could sense him and feel him since the age of 29, and I'm 62, and I can still tell when he is thinking about me, or we're still friends to this day, 38 years later. But I just shared with him this idea that we're probably twin flames. Now, keep in mind something, though. He lives over in the Netherlands. And so 4,000 miles away, I am sensing all of this stuff or this chaos that twin flames go through once in a while and between us, and which is very confusing for it. But it's this connectivity stuff that's really piqued my interest lately regarding that. So it's interesting whether it's the twin flame or just the fact that you're born together and you've got such a deeper bond connection. Very interesting. I want you two to go back though in time. Now you, I don't know if you don't have to reveal your age, or you could say approximately 10 years ago or 5 years ago when you first started all of this, but usually when kids are younger, and I'm going to just presume this on both of you because you're so close, there might be a curiosity of things or intuition that you recognize within yourselves that nobody else, either in your family or your friends, kind of pick up on. When you were younger, and even though you weren't per se perhaps that interested in the paranormal or cryptozoology or anything like that, you know, any of that nature, did you find yourselves kind of falling into this field? Because I know you mentioned it earlier when you first started this, but did you find yourself gradually falling into it?
We did. You know, like I said, we have always had that innate curiosity about what happens next. You know, where does this next journey take us once we pass? And you know, we always had these conversations growing up, you know, life after death and all of that stuff. And we would watch the popular television shows of the time. But what we did is, from a scientific background, we would ask questions like, why didn't they use this technique? Why didn't they stay longer here? You know, why didn't they ask these questions? And so that really drove us to say, let's look at this further. Once we conducted the Moundsville investigation there at the Moundsville State Penitentiary, we said, let's do this further, you know, because it serves two purposes. One, it allows us to have a very tactile experience with history and these historical locations that we go to, but it also allows us to formulate data based on our paranormal experiences, on those things that we can't explain. And so those are the two things that we really strive for with what we do now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just building on what Christy's saying in terms of that curiosity. So we grew up in a very small religious school is how we were brought up. And we've always had that kind of questioning sense about religion and spirituality, and I think we've always felt very spiritual mm-hmm. in our connections, whether it be God or higher being or however anybody wants to term it. We happen to believe in God. And so I think that that questioning started at a very early age. And I also think that we've had that that spiritual connection. And so that, to Christy's point, has really grown and expanded so that when we went through our schooling, that, that curiosity continued with us. And that's what we bring into how we paranormal, you know, how we investigate through our paranormal investigations and our paranormal teams.
Yeah, and I can relate to all of you because all three of us here have PhDs. And, mm-hmm. and even though it's not necessarily per se related directly to paranormal work, what we have done in our PhDs can be applied and utilized in our paranormal work. So I can relate very much to both of you. I went down when I was going through all of this. My experiences may have started younger and then they may have fallen off for a while and then they picked up again or whatever, because I was a college professor and I also worked in a law firm for many years. But just the ability to be able to look at things with asking more questions than just one standard question is helpful to look at that. Have you ever found, though, that once you think you have an answer, that all of a sudden something happens and then all of a sudden you change your mind and that brings up new questions? What has your experience been like?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that you bring a good point there, Kelly, in terms of the objectivity and utilizing our research background, our combined research backgrounds, bringing that objectivity to how we investigate, I think is important. And I think recognizing that that we can sometimes bring bias into the equation, so we try to control as much as we can for environmental bias and those types of things, that objectivity, I think, is important. And so when we come into a space, as you mentioned, we and something happens, we pivot and we're able to question differently. We're able to try to find where the evidence takes us. And one of the things that you'll learn about us if you watch any of our YouTube videos or anything like that is that we're not here to convince anybody of paranormal activities. We're there to try to go where the evidence leads us. And so I think innately in that, we, because of that research background, if something happens, we're constantly reevaluating, questioning, and going down that line of inquiry until the end, until either something happens or we have to pivot differently.
Yeah, let's talk about evolvement here for a second. I know that for myself, when I was younger, I don't use the word blame. I used to blame everything that I experienced on something spiritual, because I also grew up very religious, all right? And that was what we knew back then. And then all of a sudden, as time went on, I thought, you know what? Why would I go through this if it was spiritual? This must be something different. And then I don't even know the first time I actually heard the word paranormal. I couldn't even tell you. It's just part of my fiber now, so it's just natural part of my language. But, you know, if I think back to that, I'm like, when was the first time I ever heard the word paranormal, right? And then for the longest time, and then I blamed everything on being paranormal. And then I started having other experiences, and then I'm now blaming it on interdimensional or extraterrestrial, because I've had evolved experiences into that. And then it's just like now, even though with this twin flame theory and all that stuff going on, that's where I'm at right now. I'm kind of in a different thing with, but it all connects to energy, right?
It does.
And whether it's your own energy or whether it's some energy around you or whatever, there's a connection here to energy. That's really the main piece. So have you found yourselves, because once you get into the paranormal investigation work stuff, things either come home with you or start happening to you, or you start beaconing out brighter and so everything comes to you. What have you, both of you, found or discovered with yourselves as you started to investigate all of this stuff? Go ahead, take it from there.
Well, you know, the very first investigation that we did, you know, we did have unexplained experiences, footsteps, disembodied voices. And I think to Jenny's point, as we go down these investigations and we control for some of those other biases, we have experienced things that one, we can't explain, but because we have done this for so long, and I think that connection that we have, we tend to have broader experiences than some other teams do. I think that for a couple of reasons. One, that we do have that connection between each other, but also we're an all-female team. And so because of that, I think we go in with this innate sense of empathy. I'm not going to say that we're empathic per se, but females have this innate empathy. And I think because of that, we go in with a different mindset than a lot of other paranormal investigation teams do. Mm-hmm. Not to say that we're better or to disparage any team, but we just have a different philosophy of how we investigate. And so we go into these locations with that sense of respect for the history, for the spirits or the entities we're trying to communicate with. And so because of that, that level of respect that we give, I think we get that level of respect in return. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've never brought anything home with us. We've never had anything malicious happen to us. You know, even though popular television shows or YouTube channels or TikTok channels right now claim that everything is demonic, that is not our experience. Mm-hmm. Our experience is really based more on that, to your point, a connectivity, really connecting with them on that energy level and getting that respect both given and received because of kind of how we investigate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll build on that and I'll say, you know, from a spiritual sense, you know, I don't know about you, Christy, you can confirm or deny this, but me personally, it is actually just going into this paranormal and having done it for about 10 years now or so, it has expanded my scope of my spiritual connectivity with God. I feel like it has opened up different lenses that I hadn't considered before, and it actually has validated some of the feelings and beliefs that I've had from a very young age.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Say? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I should bring both of you with me sometime overseas to this one 900-year-old bed and breakfast place where I had perhaps the most terrifying experience of my life. And I went in there with a lot of empathy, and I even offered chocolates and champagne inside this room that was notoriously noted to be incredibly haunted. And I had terrifying experiences in there. And you know as well as I do that a lot of times I don't even know if really what I had in there was particularly negative, more so than demonstrating to me, because my intention of going into this one room that was very, very haunted was to get information for my book. And I got more than I had bargained for. And I'm not even sure to this day if it meant to scare the living, you know what, out of me, or if it just said, well, you want to see how bad it can get? Here, watch this. And I if you ever, when you rewatch this program, you will probably see a picture of me with the cycling mirror in the room and me having black shades kind of over my eyes that I'll never forget. But I know what you're saying about the empathy part. What I'm hearing you say is that you don't necessarily go in there to provoke anything either, mm-hmm. because that's one of the things I'm not happy about regarding some of the television programming mm-hmm. that is on, because it can elicit some Absolutely. Rather strong reactions from whatever's in there. Have you ever been in a situation yet where anything has tried to really scare you?
No, we haven't. And just to backtrack just a second, you know, we don't go in with that sense of bravado. We don't go in with egos. We don't go in with chest thumping or provoking. That is really not our style. And, you know, like I said, it really goes back to us with respect. So, for example, we're investigating Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary. Mm-hmm. And there is a location there where a darker entity is said to inhabit the auditorium. Well, when we conducted our investigation, all we did was put a voice recorder in there. And we said, we understand that this is your space. space. You don't particularly like people coming in there. And so if you want to communicate with us, here's the means to do that. But this is a large campus and we're going to investigate every other location. And this is your space and we're going to respect that because of you being in this location. And so that's really kind of how we handle those investigations is, you know, we go in, like I said, with that level of respect. And I think because of that, we haven't had anything malicious. We haven't had anything threaten us at all. Now, I will say there's some locations that are, in a sense, darker per se. And I'm not going to say darker as demonic or negative. It's just like a jail or a prison, mm-hmm. right? You have these instances or events that happened in these locations and they permeate the walls, right? That is the energy that is encased in these locations. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have a kind of a darker experience than you would at some place like, you know, say an orphanage or something like that, where there were some happier times. And so you have to go in with that mindset. You have to go in with doing your research and understanding the location than the events that happen there, and then you tailor your investigation to that location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of times, oftentimes too, we have a lot of newbies out there who mm-hmm. just go in very blindly. In terms of also, they don't protect themselves, or they don't you know. Even if I had the brightest, whitest light on me in Zach Bagan's A Haunted Museum, and it still didn't matter. I was still attacked in there. I wasn't doing anything to ask for this. It just so happens I'm a very strong, minded, powerful beacon, and I do have a lot of things that want to interact or be around me or come near me. And I have been in trances, and I have been in possessions, and I have levitated, and I have psychokinetic and telekinetic abilities during different times, which can also be misinterpreted as poltergeist activity that's not necessarily you causing that. So have you guys ever seen anything regarding things flying across the room or things moving or anything like that? And if you have, how have you reacted to that?
Mm-hmm. We have. So we've seen doors opening. We've seen some things, not you know, object move in far distances, but, you know, shake and those types of things. And to Christy's point, and I guess maybe something about our personalities, maybe similar to your Kelly, is that we're not easily spooked. So mm-hmm. we're the type of personalities where, you know, a car could backfire behind us and we're not going to, you know, jump and jump scare us type of a thing. Yeah. So we have that very calm type of a personality. And so we have seen these types of things and we've not reacted to them in like a jump scare type of a way. Mm-hmm. We've acknowledged them. We've accepted them. We've asked for more in yeah. some cases, like, can you do that again? Or can you show us more to that? And so that's how we at least have interacted on the encounters that we've had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nothing real harsh though, huh?
No, not really. I mean, we've had some balls roll, to Jenny's point. We've had some doors open, chairs will move across the floor and stuff. Not to, you know, we're talking a couple inches, nothing yeah. across the room. So we've had those experiences. I think more of a kind of a show of yes, I'm here. We had a coffee pot turn on once at 2 in the morning. It kicked on, so that was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's been more of an audible communication or a manifestation, if you will, of maybe a light or a shadow figure or something like that. But really what we've experienced is more audible. So for example, we're at the Grand Old Lady Hotel in Balsam, North Carolina. We're investigating this location. Mm-hmm. And Miranda Young from Ghost Biker, she'd actually joined us on this investigation. Mm-hmm. So we had decided, we had the entire hotel to ourselves for a weekend. And so we decided on Saturday night to sleep in this suite. It was a 3-bedroom suite, and Miranda was closest to the door, and Jenny and I were in the little interior suite. Mm-hmm. And we had set up some voice recorders. We had set up some cameras during the night, to night vision cameras. And we had been talking about the fact that we were leaving the next morning, when we were going to go to breakfast, where we're going to go, when we're going to pack up and all of that. And so you hear us say goodnight, and about 15 minutes later, there's a voice, a very clear voice. It says, please don't go. Huh. And so that to us was in a direct response of us talking about we're going to leave the next morning. Mm-hmm. So you hear Miranda say, did y'all hear that? And I said, yes. And she said, what was that? And I said, there's a man outside our door. And she's like, that's what I thought. And so we, none of us reacted. I mean, we didn't even turn over in the bed. We're just listening to see if something else is going to happen. So to Jenny's point, you know, we didn't get up screaming. We didn't run over and yank the door over. It was a, like, let's see how this is going to play out and if something else is going to happen. And I think if you react in that calm manner, they're going to respond in kind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I tried in the cycling mirror room, but, and though, one of the things though, when that happened to me, to your point, is that, when that mirror started cycling literally around like this in front of me, my husband just threw the holy water to bless the bed and our environment before we were going to go to sleep. And I was facing this, oval shaped, Victorian like kind of floor length mirror, and it just went kind of dan, 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 and then it started cycling around. I was absolutely terrified. I went into severe, panic attack, but I wasn't sure yet if it was trying to scare us out of there, because when we went in there and I had asked for the most haunted room, the manager was not going to put me in the most haunted room, because she said that people would only stay 20 minutes in that room and then they would be sleeping down in the lobby all night. And she said, I'll put you in the second most haunted room. Oh, thank you. Because honest to God, that one was probably the most haunted room you could ever imagine. And I was just so terrified. And my husband, I don't know if you've noticed this, even between you two, if one of you has an experience and the other one does not, because my husband was just kind of like in a trancel kind of way, and he just went and he went to bed, and I was laying there just absolutely, you'll see it in the picture, you'll see it, terrified. Mm-hmm. But I do want to ask you both about this, because some people experience it and some people do not. I call it the electrical cobweb, where mm-hmm. you walk through something so electrified that you just kind of, your whole body just lights up, especially if you're very intuitive. Have either of you had any kind of experience like that wherever you may have investigated?
For me personally, not so much a cobweb state, I would say, but there, since we've been doing this, the more we're delving into this and the more investigations that we do, I've noticed that if something is going to manifest or we catch an EVP or something like that, I do start to tingle a little bit, especially right on my left side. It's not something that I would say is an ability, but it's just something that I picked up on. And I'll say to Jenny, you know, my left leg is starting to tingle just a little bit. Something may happen. Let's sit here for a minute and see if we can capture an EVP or see a manifestation. But that's my thing that I picked up on lately.
Mm-hmm. I've not experienced anything like that, but I love the terminology.
I know.
That's brilliant.
Oh, you mean electrical cobweb?
Yeah.
Well, we walked up the stairs. They didn't have an elevator in this place. And we walked up the stairs with our luggage. Now, some people would say, oh, that was just you being exhausted from walking up the stairs with your heavy luggage when you have to, especially in these older buildings, right? No, it wasn't, because the gal who brought us up the stairs and me, and then it was my husband. The minute, what it was the maid was actually, you couldn't see her at the time, but her presence was so, so strong that when this gal and I, you talk about tingling, I went, woof, electrified. And the other gal went, woof. And she goes, did you feel that? And I said, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. And not only that, I just saw her. And I saw this maid kind of rush around the corner very quickly. And I was able to match the look that I saw on this maid to a picture of someone who actually is one of the 12 or 14 ghosts that reside in that building. And
awesome.
I said, if I ever ghost hunted with you in there, I'm telling you right now, I just say good luck to you. You know, I'm going to sleep in the lobby all night. But it is, it's like what you say with the tingling. Mm-hmm. When I get a lot of tingling, like really severe, I know I'm in the presence of something. Mm-hmm. It's either by me, near me, around me, or whatever, but I can tell. I was just at a conference in Washington, and I went over to talk to this one vendor, and she was like, we're just talking, and I'm like, oh, my God, do you feel that? I said, this is, I'm tingling really badly right now. She says, yeah. the gal next to me, she's got him lined up at her door here. She was a psychic. And so they like to follow. They like to line up to talk to her, basically. And I said, yeah, they're in a line right now. She said they're, and it was very strong energy. So that's interesting between you two, though, regarding your abilities and the tingling and the not so much tingling. But do you have anything at all that you can identify for yourself?
Yeah, it's interesting you asked this question, Kelly, because my, I think, sense is smell. So I have, unfortunately, I have poor eyesight and bad hearing. So I've always had a really keen sense of smell. And that actually, we utilize that a lot in our investigations because I will smell cigar smoke or perfume is a big one. You know, kind of just different scents and smell scents that will come out of a location. So I don't have the tingling. I'm trying to recall if I've ever had a tingle before, but definitely I can smell things.
So. Now, when you smell things, and I have too, I'm also clairsentient. Do you think it's residual, or do you think you're in the possibility that you are in the area of something intelligent that's somehow drawn to you and is just hanging near you?
Yeah, I think both. I absolutely think both. And it just depends on the location, on where we're at. You know, there's sometimes where, like Fort Mifflin that we were at, kind of that smell of gunpowder type of a feel. The battleship, the USS North Carolina, was the same way. The Grand Old Lady, like a lacy perfume, if that makes sense. So it just really depends. I think it's both residual and intelligent.
I smelled I've smelled things perfumey in various situations. Did you ever go to the, was it called the Whaley or the Wiley House? Whaley House in South San Diego. Have you been there yet?
We've not, no.
Okay, I know I was sitting outside, just sitting with my husband at a table, and I said, and then two people walked by, but not very close, very, you know, quite kind of at a distance. And I said, "Good Lord, did you smell that?" I said, "My God, that perfume was so strong. That's horrible, you know." But then I come to realize that because of the distance and everything, I'm like, now wait just a minute here. We're in a very haunted place here. There's several of them around here. And again, we're also sitting in one of the favorite chairs of one of the apparitions, apparently. But that smell wasn't coming from them. That smell was coming from something that was standing near and probably was saying to me, get out of my chair. But, you know, it's interesting when you can smell that, because then you have to determine if it's intelligent or if it's possibly residual in any way. So, go ahead.
Well, I mean, to Jenny's point, we were at the USS North Carolina, and we had the entire ship to ourselves. It was just the two of us. And we had gone down this corridor a dozen times that night. And then Jenny stopped and said, "I smell roses. I smell something here." And I didn't smell it, but we captured a really cool EVP that night in that location.
Oh, you did? When you get those EVPs, I'm always curious about that, because I usually don't, I don't think I've ever tried to get an EVP ever in any way, because I am such a, I can usually sense when something's around me or near me. Now, it would be interesting to actually hear something and some of the words that come out. Now, I have used some of these ghost apps, and I don't know what your impression is on that. But for me, if you understand your equipment well enough, and you're using, and it doesn't even matter if you're using an app or whatever. Some people have very strong opinions about these ghost apps that speak out words. You have to know when it's just coming from the app or a mishap of a word that wasn't found that they're trying to use, or whether or not it's intelligent. And I can usually now tell the difference between if I have a hit or if I'm having garbage words come out that don't make any sense at all. But I've had sometimes some pretty interesting conversations with you by the use of a ghost app. Now, for your EVPs, what kinds of things do you usually capture on no matter where you're at? Can you think of some situations and the different EVPs you've captured?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, almost every location that we've gone to, we've been fortunate enough to capture something unexplainable. And I really think that's the way we conduct our investigations to start with. We do set out voice recorders, static voice recorders. We have 12. So for example, the USS North Carolina, we had 12 sitting out in different locations. So even if we're not physically in a room or a location on the property, we still have ears on that location. And for us, EVPs are the hardest to debunk. Right, a light anomaly or something like that, you know, we can explain away by so many other factors. But when we're the only two people on a battleship and we capture a man's voice, that to us is very hard to debunk. So for example, we were on the USS North Carolina, and this is just one example, and we were crossing into the medical ward. And the bulkhead of this battleship, when you go through it, the doorways are very tight. Yeah. And so we were constantly either hitting our elbows or, you know, scuffing our shoes or something like that, because you got to step over them. And so we walked into the medical facility there, the medical ward. And I said, you know, do you want to sit down and do some EVP work in here? And you hear her say yes. And then a man said, just watch your arm. When we walked in. So very intelligent.
Yep.
It knew that we had been hitting our elbows most of the night. We're going into the medical ward, and it's basically saying, just be careful, watch your arm. And so that to us is very intelligent. And again, I can't debunk that because there were no men on the ship that night, you know, with us investigating. So, you know, those are the type of things that we capture, both residual and intelligent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have you ever had anything tell you to get out?
Oh, we have. You know, at the historic Scott County Jail, which is in Tennessee, Huntsville, Tennessee, I co-own that with Miranda Young. Every now and then you'll hear something say get out or leave. But basically for us, it's more like I'm not interested in talking today. Not so much as a get out because I hate you
right.
type of an answer. It's right. more like I just don't want to deal with you right now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's kind of interesting too, because I'm almost a little nervous to one of the things that I find out when I'm taking pictures or trying to take some snaps. And I was just at this conference in Washington, and we went on a house, tour, you know, haunted little house tour. The place was apparently really, really haunted and all that stuff. And when they wanted to come out in whatever form or whatever they wanted to do, they'd make themselves known. And so the night that we were there, my husband and I dragged him along with me. And I said, here, we're just going to go and run around some of the rooms and see what we can capture. And there was a lot of active orb activity in there, even though some say it was dust. But the intelligence, it's the movement that kind of changed my mind once in a while as to whether or not what it could be. But I shot a picture up in the attic, facing a window, and this was like the tallest you up way up there. And at first I really wasn't looking, but there was nothing that looked really, I guess I was looking for something else. So anyway, about a week ago, I went through my pictures again. And sure enough, there was a lady, and I believe it was a man, that actually were, because I had a frame before it mm-hmm. and a frame after it, just, I call it the sandwich effect, boom, boom, mm-hmm. boom, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I said, look at right here. If that's not the woman that they've been talking about in this household, you cannot tell me that that's not something. I said, look at this picture here. That mm-hmm. she's not there. It's not there. I stood in the same spot, shot the same thing, 1/2 second apart, and then one from one thing to another, which kind of showed itself. The other thing was kind of hard to determine, but it had a hat on. And I haven't shared that picture with them at all yet, just to let them know I made a capture. But people are like, yeah, they just didn't want to talk tonight. Yeah, you know, blah, 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 blah. After the fact is what I'm getting at here. When you bring your stuff back to wherever you're going to, is this when you discover it, or do you have things as instant as watch your arm or watch your elbow mm-hmm. Happen? What's your experience been like?
It's both.
It's both.
Yeah. And so to Christy, you know, two illustrations when we were at the Grand Old Lady, that mm-hmm. was definitely in the moment. That was auditory. We heard that in the moment. So that is that's right there with us, that mm-hmm. that tangible piece. The one that Christy just referenced on the USS North Carolina, the watch arm, that mm-hmm. was embedded in the equipment, if you will. And mm-hmm. so that is one that we discovered upon review mm-hmm. of our equipment. Mm-hmm. And so it's half and half. I mean, we get some really good knocks and bangs and sometimes EVPs as well in the moment, which is always fun for us. And then a lot of it is also just in our equipment once we go back and investigate.
Yeah. And when we go back and review our footage, both visual footage and audio footage, we listen to it in the raw. We do not put it through any software. We just put our headphones in and we hit play on our voice recorders. And so if we've got 10 voice recorders running for 10 hours, we're listening to 100 hours of audio. And that to me allows us to do a more thorough analyzation of that voice recorder, because I don't want to miss anything. So for example, we were at the Lizzie Borden house and Jenny and Cara, one of our investigators, they were sitting in the parlor. And the very first thing that we do when we go to a location, as soon as we cross the threshold, we have our voice recorders going. Even when we're carrying in luggage or equipment, those voice recorders are set out and they're recording. And so Jenny and Cara were sitting in the parlor where Andrew Borden was killed. Mm. And they were just talking about the differences between the Villisca Axe murder house, which we had investigated prior, and the Lizzie Borden murders. And so they were just talking, and Cara makes the statement. She says, being axed to death would be a horrible way to die. And a man's voice said it was.
Oh, geez.
We captured that on the voice recorder. We didn't hear it audibly, but we did capture it. And so that shows a couple of things. One, it's intelligent. It's listening to the conversation and it's inserting itself into the conversation. And two, we can't debunk that. There were no men in that house that night, nowhere on the property. And so that for us is a very tangible piece of evidence, of data that we've collected that, you know, we call the unexplained.
Mm-hmm. You know, that brings me to a question on that too. And I drip here. Here's a question for you on that. Now, people will ask the question, was the voice that you heard, was that his voice? Was that a voice being used to respond on behalf of him and his voice? Do you think that that was the voice of the man who was killed? Or do you think that something intervened to use their voice so that way you could hear that response, or, you know, hear that for the moment? What do you think on that?
Yeah, you know, barring any other evidence, I think we'd have to go with that's his voice, because we have no recordings of the actual person in life. And so we have nothing to compare it to. So the assumption would be that it is him and his voice that's manifesting itself. And then kind of to build on that, and kind of what Christy was saying as well, is that I love those moments where an EVP interjects into our conversation, because we're having this moment, we're not even really paying attention, if you will, to the environment and to the paranormal. It's us having these conversations, mm-hmm. these natural flowing conversations, and something just wants to insert itself. So I really love that aspect of it. But back to your point directly, barring any other evidence, I think that we'd have to assume that it is the actual the manifestation of the person in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just had one myself. I was on I think it was the author's panel at this conference just a couple weeks ago, and it was brought to everybody's attention the next day. I didn't even know about this. I was up there chattering away about a question that was asked, and we were in a very haunted theater. And, you know, of course, I didn't know who was haunting the theater. Oh, I guess I kind of did. I guess there was a man that was haunting the theater. And then there was other individuals at one point, or whatever, I should say, apparitions. But I was chattering about something, and I guess over the loudspeaker, and in a man's voice came. And so one of the people that I know very well from the conference was listening to me chatter, had brought it up the next day and had said, yeah, it was when that I was speaking and I brought up some point about something, that it was just exactly what you're talking about a second ago. It's more fun to have them interact when we're having just a casual conversation mm-hmm. about whatever. And whatever I said obviously was very interesting. Oh, I don't know, you know, but he he was not anybody from the conference. It wasn't anyone else that accidentally got on the thing. It actually just came right over the loudspeaker. So it's very interesting. What are your thoughts and feelings about, well, I'm going to go back to the television shows for just a second, because without mentioning any names, what kinds of things do you want to discuss about things that either you're happy that you're seeing them do, or maybe not happy seeing them kind of portray? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, for us, the television shows, they serve a purpose, but then they do us a disservice. Mm-hmm. The first one is they allow the general public to know that the subculture exists, right? That there are people out there investigating the paranormal, investigating cryptids, investigating UFOs. And so they allow the general populace to know that we're out there. I do think that they serve a disservice in the fact that they put these narratives out there that aren't exactly true. For example, a certain paranormal investigation show had just filmed at a location that we went to. They had filmed there about 3 or 4 weeks before we had gotten there. And that television show, we were there on the location during our investigation for 9 hours. The television show was there for 4 days. They had to dress the same each day for continuity. They had to retake certain instances because they, and so people have to understand that is scripted. Their entire reason for being is to get an audience base. So there is some sensationalism that has to occur in order to hold the attention span of that audience base. And so I think if the audience goes into it with that mindset, they'll get a different appreciation for what we do, because it's not like that. We don't have a production team. We don't have a scripted story. You know, we don't go in there with these preconceived set ideas or scripts or anything like that. For us, what we do is very raw. And I think that's where television shows and now really TikTokers and Instagrammers, they do a disservice for what we, as I want to say, the true paranormal investigators. For me, I think there's three different terms. I think there's those that are ghost hunters that just go and want to have an experience, but they're not really documenting anything. I think there are those of us who are paranormal investigators who are in it to have really that historical connection and to put forth a very valid historical narrative. And then you've got the TikTokers and the YouTubers who are in it for sensationalism and likes and subscribes. You know, for us, if you go to our YouTube channel or our Facebook page or anything like that, we are not monetized. Even though we have thousands of hits and thousands of subscribers, we do not monetize because we do not want to give the appearance that we are doing this for monetization or to get any type of revenue. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what sets the paranormal investigator apart from those who are in it for more sensational methods.
Mm-hmm. And I'll build on that and say, I think another disservice from my angle, particularly with Instagram and TikTok and those types of things, because they're such quick moments. I think the fun of it and what we do is that we get to interact with history, number one. So not many people can say that they've spent the entire evening essentially owning a battleship, right, for the night. Right. And a lot of it is sitting there and just being quiet,
yeah,
right? Having that moment where you're asking a question or you're just sitting there listening. And there's a lot of silence that's built into at least how we investigate. Mm-hmm. And I think that those are really the special moments, because you're in the space, you're kind of soaking it in, you're living it in, and you're able to just be with the environment, which I think is half the fun of it. Mm-hmm. But that's boring, right? That's boring if we were to put that onto a TikTok or some type of a TV show. And I think that is another kind of disservice for, at least for me, mm-hmm. because part of it is just sitting there being quiet, being silent, listening to how the environment interacts with you, listening to how the space interacts with you, and then hopefully hearing how the paranormal interacts with you as well.
Mm-hmm. Have either of you ever been in a situation where it has gone dead silent and you said to yourself, I don't think we're by ourselves anymore. This is too creepy. And can you give an illustration if you have?
Oh, absolutely. So Miranda and I, again, we run the historic Scott County Jail in Huntsville, Tennessee, but we also run all of the After Dark programming for Rugby, Tennessee, which is a utopian village that was built in 1870 and really in operation from 1870 to 1879. And so we do all of the guided ghost hunts. We do the After Dark tours. We do the paranormal investigations. We lead all of that. All of their After Dark programming, that's our responsibility. And so there was one instance where I had a flashlight tour, and we have access to these buildings that were built in, you know, the 1870s. So we have access to all of those. So we were in one of those, and this was during the summer in the mountains of Tennessee, and you've got the cicadas, you've got the, you know, the katydids, the crickets, everything, the frogs, everything going off in the middle of this forest. And we're sitting there doing a brief EVP session, and it just kind of dawns on us that everything has stopped. Mm-hmm. And when we listened, there was no movement outside. There were no owls hooting anymore. Everything had just gone completely silent, right. Both outside and inside the building that we were in. And, you know, at that moment, we did have a couple of things happen on our K2 meters, which is, again, kind of unexplainable. Mm-hmm. So to your point, that is absolutely something that we've experienced there.
Mm-hmm. Did you say you're out in the forest?
Yeah, in Tennessee.
Any type of a Bigfoot connection there?
There have been sightings around, I'm not sure how close, but yeah, in that East Tennessee area, there have been different reports of sightings. Yep.
Have you ever researched that at all to figure out why things go dead silent?
No, not really. That's nothing that we've delved into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And have you had any opportunity to have dead silence, or were you together when this happened?
I was not. So I live down here in Florida. And so Christy and Miranda have their business up in Tennessee with Rugby. So I was not during that encounter. But to answer your question, Kelly, I think, you know, we've had this experiences or this type of experience when we're investigating different locations as well, where, to your point, you brought it up before, where the environment seemed to be very active, like the house or the establishment will have, for lack of a better term, like a hum. Mm-hmm. Or kind of that, you know, white noise that's happening around you. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a point in the investigation where it will go still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of two things happen. Either it goes still and we don't catch anything, or more often than not, it goes still. And then we know something's happening. Yeah. Something's going to get ready kind of prime itself
right.
to happen. Mm-hmm. And so more often than not, that's what we experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know it's a little bit unnerving too. I don't know about you, but my stomach has a tendency to start hurting or starts getting upset or something like that. Or especially when I'm attacked, that's the one place that I always get upset is in my stomach. And, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're going, oh my God, right? And I don't know if I have a tendency to be attacked or to have things like think that I'm getting a little bit too close. I mean, I've had sparks fly out of my cameras before. I've had sparks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a lot of different things. When something, I've had confusion. How about missing time? Either of you ever gone through missing time yet?
No.
If I have, I don't remember too much about that, but there are times. Have you ever had in your investigations where something wants to stir either of you up to the point of like arguing or having an argument or having conflict with each other? Have you had that yet?
No. I mean, every investigation has been one for us where, I mean, we kind of know what we want to do when we go in. And to Jenny's point, you know, earlier, that we kind of play off each other, but we've never had any conflict at mm-hmm. a location. It's just something that we've never experienced.
Well, yet anyway, you never know. And
yeah, you never know.
So what are you guys doing next? I know as we're kind of going into kind of a mini wrap up, but what kind of aspirations do you have now? I mentioned the thing about me. I went over to Europe because I wanted to compare the investigations. I'm a citizen researcher, so I don't usually, I usually research with me and I use my husband as ghost bait. You know, he doesn't... Here, go stand over here. Let's see if anything happens to him while he's over there. He hates that. He doesn't even want to believe in half the stuff either, you know. But someone's got to go with me. I said, I'm not going over there by myself, and I'll let you know if I feel anything, you know. And I have, sometimes he just doesn't, right? But I wanted to compare notes. I wanted to go over to Europe and say, is their energy over here stronger or different, or will it react differently if I'm over here? And I don't know if it's really strong or anything like that. I think it depends on where you are. I think it depends on the story and the history of the place that you've been. I think it depends on the resident apparitions of which people speak of. I think there's all kinds of things involved. So me throwing this back on both of you, what do you aspire to next?
Well, for us, I mean, we are continuing on with our investigations. I mean, we do have aspirations to go overseas as well. We do have a international bucket list that we'd like to check off here, start checking that off at some point. For us, it's really just building Soul Sisters Paranormal, getting more investigations out there. Really, we do have some aspirations into either a podcast or a book series as well. So that's something that we're going to be working on and talking about also. So really just taking that next progressive step into the paranormal research.
Good. I don't know. I think that would be a really interesting thing for you guys to do, but don't be frustrated or discouraged if you go over there and you find that something doesn't want to make itself known or chatter with you. And beware of the fact that some of these energies over there are a little bit more on the angry side sometimes. And so it might be, you feel tingling, you might feel a lot of tingling. You smell sensations, you'll probably pick up things really quickly when it involves certain smells. So that's kind of a good thing. How interesting. Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you to learn more about you, to read about you, to see you. Start with that.
Well, our website is www.soulsistersparanormal.com. So anything you want to know about us is there. All of our videos are there. We have a kind of a mini spinoff series that I call Landmark Legends and Lore. So you can watch all of those episodes there as well. We're also very active on Facebook under Soul Sisters Paranormal. And our YouTube channel is Soul Sisters Paranormal.
On behalf of the show, thank you so much for being with us today.